The sun broke through the clouds over southeastern Iceland, lighting the broad surface of the Vatnajökull glacier in blinding white. 400 meters beneath the ice cap, a vast system of tunnels was suddenly illuminated by a series of dazzling emerald beams from the power ring of the Green Lantern. As he flew through the subglacial corridors, the lantern's beams glanced across the silver-gray body armor of a score of Cobra troopers, who immediately responded with blue-white fire from their pulse rifles.
Whoa!
Green Lantern ducked and weaved between the first wave of pulse fire, quickly erecting a green energy shield to ward off the troopers' continuing assault.
Looks like Interpol was right about this hidden base. Ah! Okay, tough guys. How about if I meet you halfway?
The energy of the ring swept over Green Lantern, covering him from head to toe in thick emerald armor. A long medieval shield took form over his left arm, and the handle of a huge mace filled his ring hand.
Now, let's see just how good your armor fares against Sir Smites-a-Lot! Yeah!
The armored lantern smashed his way through the first line of troopers, sending them flying. The pulse fire of the second line failed to even slow him down. His ring fired a verdant energy net over them. In seconds, they were hopelessly ensnared. A giant green bottle opener flew over the captive troopers, gently popping off their helmets. As the troopers' jaws widened in amazement, they each found their mouths held open by oversized green tongue depressors.
That's it. Everyone open up and say ah. Yeah, no one's going to be chomping down on any poison pills today.
Lantern, no! Don't let them move a muscle!
Superman? What? Why?
Just do it!
But as Superman reached for the first of the captive troopers, the man's armor blew apart.
Son of a gun! The armor. It was all loaded with self-destruct charges. And he sacrificed themselves for Cobra rather than let themselves be taken captive. I thought I had everything here under control. I was cracking jokes, making fun of them. And now they're dead. They're all dead.
You didn't know.
Maybe I should have. We were warned about the hollow teeth with the suicide pills.
Kyle plopped down on a big chunk of ice.
I should have guessed that there'd be a backup. Cobra doesn't leave anything to chance. How long does it take to get good at this?
When I find out, I'll let you know.
Huh?
I ran up against the same thing at the Cobra base I found in Sardinia just a few minutes ago. And I didn't do any better. They all sacrificed themselves too. I tried to get word to you via the watchtower, but there was too much interference. Try not to be too hard on yourself, okay?
Oh, okay.
Kyle didn't know what to say. He had never thought of Superman screwing up. He always seemed to know what he was doing. For the first time, Kyle noticed the bags under his teammate's eyes.
Hey, Superman. Are you all right?
Just a little weary. Been on the go a lot this past week. Batman was right. I need to recharge.
Yeah. I can hear that. You must get pretty tired of stuff like this. Sometimes I'm surprised you haven't just taken over by now.
Taken over what?
The world. Everything. Haven't you ever considered running things yourself?
No. That's not the way I was brought up.
Yeah, me neither. But let me play devil's advocate for a moment. Seriously, it's not like the world's leaders have been doing all that great a job. Do you mean to sit there and tell me that, with all the power you have, you've never given it any thought?
All right. I won't say that I never gave it any thought. But not for any great length of time, never very seriously. Even if I wanted that kind of authority, and I don't, it wouldn't work. There would still be despots like Cobra. And besides, I'm not immortal. Let's say that I set myself up as world dictator. It wouldn't last. Whatever I accomplished would come apart once I died.
You think so?
It's the history of the world. Warlords die and empires crumble. I've always thought that George Washington set the best example for how to run things. He could probably have become a king, you know.
I'll have to take your word for it. Junior year history class was a long time ago, and all I remember about Washington is the father of our country stuff.
From all that I've read, he was a fascinating man. He had two opportunities to establish an American dynasty and passed on both of them. Remember, Kyle, Washington was the great general, the hero of the Revolution. At the end of that war, a lot of colonists would have accepted him as king. They were used to answering to a monarch, after all. But all he wanted to do was go home to Mount Vernon. Even George III was impressed.
The King of England? Really?
Absolutely. When King George heard that Washington planned to retire to Mount Vernon, the old king said, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. But that's exactly what Washington did. Twice. After the Constitution was adopted, he accepted the country's call to come back and become its first president. But then he stepped down after just two terms in office, ensuring a peaceful transition to a newly elected leader. He willingly walked away from the office, establishing one of the first great presidents of the Republic. He believed, Kyle. He believed in the idea that power belongs to the people, not to their leaders. And that is true greatness.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And so was Washington. Thanks, Superman. I read stuff like that in school, but the books always made it seem so dead and dry.
I was lucky. I had good teachers. Ever heard of Blaise Pascal?
Pascal. Didn't he have something to do with triangles?
Among other things. He was a 17th century scientist and mathematician, but he was also something of a philosopher. There was a passage from Pascal's papers that's always stayed with me. He wrote that justice without strength is helpless. Strength without justice is tyrannical.
Then it's up to us to help keep justice strong.
That it is, Lantern. That it is.
Fifty feet above the South Atlantic, Wonder Woman's robot plane hovered silently several miles off the north coast of a tiny island in the Tristan da Cunha group. The little cluster of volcanic islands, midway between South America and South Africa, were administered by the British Colonial Office, and Her Majesty's government had received reports of suspicious activity in the area. After leaving her plane, the Amazon warrior flew low over the ocean toward the island. As she drew near the rocky coastline, Diana dove beneath the waves. With long, powerful strokes, she circled the island until she came to the mouth of an underwater cave. The entrance showed signs of having been enlarged and reinforced. Wonder Woman rapidly swam the length of the passage to a spot where light shone softly from an interior source. There, she kicked off from the cave floor and ascended alongside a docked submarine. The sub bore no national ensign. Its only markings were the serpentine insignia of the Order of Nolopambu. Diana paused for a moment at the stern of the vessel and grabbed hold of the craft's propulsion screws, yanking them off their drive shafts and letting them sink to the bottom. Only then did she surface amid the shadows of the secret submarine pen, without taking an audible breath. Emerging stealthily from the water, she caught a lone guard by surprise. She went for the man's pressure points. She then bound and gagged the guard with strips torn from his clothing and hid him behind a stack of crates. Wonder Woman leapt up above a row of electrical lights suspended by cables from the high cave ceiling and flew deeper into the complex. 30 feet on, she stopped and hovered in a shaded part of the ceiling as one hooded cultist passed by below. She trailed after him until he encountered another masked man and handed a parcel over to him.
Hassin, make haste! You must deliver these maps to the Naja Naja at once!
Two corridors away, in a tightly guarded inner chamber, a regal golden-clad figure addressed a corps of elite assassins.
You will soon embark on a most important mission to the coastal cities of Brazil. When North America falls, you must be prepared to seize control of the South, all for the greater glory of the Kali Yuga.
We pledge our lives to the Kali Yuga!
The golden figure looked up expectantly as a hooded underling entered with a parcel.
Ah, Hassin, bring the maps here. Stop, what is that sound?
Wonder Woman came smashing through the door. The Amazon swept through the assembled assassins, rendering them all unconscious in a matter of seconds. Hassin fell to a passing blow as she notched her lasso and cast it over the man in gold.
You cannot resist my lasso of truth, Cobra. Those bound within its coils are compelled to speak honestly.
He stared blankly at her.
I am not Cobra. I am but one of the Sahib's many lookalikes, sent here to rally the corps and deliver the Most Holy One's orders.
What can you tell me?
I can tell you the orders for these assassins.
What else do you know?
Only that I am to remain here until summoned elsewhere by the Naja Naja.
Do you know anything else? Where is the weather wizard?
I do not know. The Naja's doubles are of the Order's lower levels. We are informed of plans only on a need-to-know basis. All I know is the orders that I am to deliver. They are for the mission that is to follow the successful completion of Operation New Dawn.
I hope the others are having better luck.
On an island in the South Pacific, the Martian Manhunter skimmed low, invisible, over the rim of an inactive volcano. Information relayed to the Justice League by Australian intelligence indicated that this might be another Nullapambu stronghold, and so John had flown there to check it out. Peering down into the cone with his Martian vision, he could see hooded men moving about in an underground base. The invisible Manhunter immediately lowered his density and passed down through rock and steel into the heart of the facility. Maintaining his invisibility, John returned to solid form. The cultists were surprised by the sudden alarms. The Martian reached telepathically into the mind of the nearest man, grasping surface information about base security. In seconds, a heavily armed squad of men burst into the chamber, weapons drawn, ready to capture or kill any intruder. What they found was a tall, dark figure facing a cluster of their fellow cultists, the hooded men bowing low before the mysterious form. The squad leader warily approached the strange figure from behind.
In the name of the Most Holy One, I demand your surrender. Turn around slowly, with your hands elevated.
Hands?
The head that turned to face the squad leader was huge and serpentine, staring at him with unblinking eyes.
What are you?
Suddenly, a massive 20-foot-long cobra reared up before them.
How many hands do you want?
Three pairs of arms grew out of the giant snake's body, six fingers pointing an accusation at the hooded men.
You follow a pretender who leads you on a false path. I am the true Naja Naja. You dare defy your god?
The snake angrily whipped his way through the weapons fire and lashed out with his tail, knocking the disbelievers unconscious.
No! Please! Please forgive us!
Do not fear. Sleep. Sleep.
Surrounded by unconscious men, the snake god morphed back into the form of the Manhunter. Looking over the prone forms around him, he reached out with his mind to the other cultists elsewhere in the base. From the watchtower, the Atom transmitted the latest reports to the Batman over his secured communications link.
And that's all Diana and John were able to uncover. The bases they found were staffed with cultists of the lowest levels. They didn't know where other strongholds might be found. A lot of them didn't even know where in the world they were.
And yet, the Pacific location boasted a more sophisticated security net. Why?
Good question. Of all the League regulars, John's been the most active in the Pacific Rim. Could Cobra have taken special precautions in anticipation that he'd be the one to show up there?
All things are possible where Cobra's concerned, Adam. This is getting us nowhere. The world's intelligence agencies haven't found much more than I had already.
The Atom gazed over his screens. The main monitor showed weather patterns worldwide, none of them particularly good.
We're running out of time. The jet stream is undergoing a radical shift, and conditions conducive to heat inversions are building around our major cities. Cobra will be striking soon, and we still don't know from where.
On the comm screen, the Atom could see the Dark Knight tapping in a code.
I'm looking for possible launch facilities, but there are simply too many places to search in North America alone, even for the Flash.
The Batman closed his eyes and rubbed the bridge of his nose. It was the weariest gesture the Atom had ever seen from him.
Have you had any luck in tracking those signals to their source?
Some, but not enough. The Blue Beetle is here, helping fine-tune the scanners, but there's still so much electromagnetic noise in the way. None of the algorithms I've tried has made much headway.
Dr. Palmer slumped back in his chair, letting his own exhaustion show. He closed his eyes and visualized his favorite trails along the glens and gorges in and around Ivytown. He had to believe that he would somehow solve this problem so he could see those waterfalls again. Potter's Falls were his favorite, a taller drop than Niagara. They were beautiful even in bad weather. On a sunny day in springtime, with a fresh snowmelt thundering over the brink, they were breathtaking. He visualized himself standing at the overlook, watching the sunlight glitter on the falls. Tall oaks and maples grew right up to the edge of the gorge, and he pictured the ever-changing interplay of light and shadows among the leaves.
Wait a second.
An idea suddenly popped into his head, just like that. The subconscious doing its job, making connections.
Here's a thought. What if we map the signal patterns against the weather patterns? If the signals correspond to any places with halfway decent weather...
Interesting. It's worth a try. We'll adjust the weather patterns to blue and your signal traces to amber, and then...
Suddenly, the windows merged, superimposing one map over the other. A small series of green dots appeared on the merged maps.
Hello? I think we've got something here.
The Atom punched in a code, directing his scanners to concentrate on those areas. Two of the dots glowed much more brightly than the others.
There are definitely two major loci here, and I'm reading strong transmission patterns between the two sites. One in the Indian Ocean and one in North America, almost in the middle of the continent. Do you have any idea what's in that spot?
The Batman's fingers were already flying across his keypad, checking the North American location.
Yes, Adam. Yes, I do.
A weary man of steel floated in orbit, high above the northern hemisphere, a compact oxygen mask over his nose and mouth. He breathed deeply, slowly, as he soaked up the rays of the sun. Miles below, a few clouds were beginning to part, revealing sections of North America. Normally, that sight would have cheered him, but now he feared that it meant Cobra was ready to strike. The weather looked most turbulent over areas that were home, Superman knew, to major military bases. That seemed horribly ominous.
Superman.
Superman tapped a transceiver on the side of his breathing mask.
Yes, we found him. Cobra or the Weather Wizard? Both, I think. The Atom and I have narrowed the search to two sites, and knowing Cobra, I'm sure which one is his. He's hiding right in the United States, hundreds of feet underground.
What? Where?
It's a decommissioned missile silo in South Dakota. I've run a check, and it turns out that this particular facility is one of several across the country that were purchased over the past 2 years by a chain of dummy companies. The weather is starting to clear over each of those locations. This must be how he plans to launch his attack, by missiles fired from within our own borders.
Have you alerted the Pentagon?
Affirmative, but wind conditions have the air fleet all but grounded, and ground troops will never arrive in time.
Understood. Give me the coordinates of the Dakota base, and dispatch the others to the launch sites.
Will do. Just remember, Cobra takes special precautions wherever he goes. An incursion into his private lair is likely to trigger the launch sequences.
I'm sure it will, but do we dare wait any longer?
No.
Then we all have to act, and act fast. The coordinates.
Transmitting them now. Remember, Cobra will want
to... Make an example of me? Don't worry, I've taken precautions too.
The man of tomorrow peered down at the Earth, his eyes focused on a South Dakota plane.
I see the footprint of the silo now. Are the other sites covered?
Affirmative. The Justice League is en route and closing on their targets now. Green Lantern will provide emergency backup as needed.
Then I'm going in.
Superman dove toward Earth like a living missile. His breathing mask melted away from the friction. The edges of his cape began to smoke and char. A half mile above the ground, he tucked himself up into a ball and dropped straight for his target. The 7 protective blast shields did nothing to stop him. One 100 feet down, in a large underground chamber, Superman finally braked to a stop and looked around him. Much of the underground lair was hidden from his view by lead shielding, but he could see enough to know where he had to go. He sped down a corridor to a massive, foot-thick steel door. At the opposite end of the room, a golden-clad man sat upon a throne.
Superman! Do come in.
As the Man of Steel advanced on his foe, sections of the floor opened up and 3 huge robots emerged, one directly in front of Superman and 2 on either side of him. The massive 15-foot-tall automatons closed in. Superman stared hard at the robot ahead of him, sending twin beams of heat melting into its core. Two other robots quickly closed in and started pounding on Superman. The last blow rocketed Superman towards the wall. He recovered quickly. The robot shut off as it fell to the floor. Superman grabbed at the robot's hand, and he tore off its forearm. He swung the arm like a club, decapitating the second robot. Superman then turned again toward Cobra.
I'm impressed, Superman. No one has ever stood up to one of my servitors before, much less three. A pity there is still a fourth.
A powerful energy beam blasted into Superman from behind. Stunned, he fell to the floor. Then two more metal fists began pounding him mercilessly. They did not stop until he was unconscious. Halfway around the world, the Flash raced across the Indian Ocean toward a tiny atoll in the Maldive Islands. There were no signs of any human habitation on the atoll, just a small automated satellite relay station, barely bigger than a one-car garage. As he zipped around the tiny building, he could see the logo of Star Lab stenciled on its side.
No security cameras out here. Are you sure this is the right place, Adam?
It must be. Star Labs has never maintained a station on this atoll.
Mm-hmm. This door looks locked. Breaking in would be bad form. We don't want to announce ourselves.
Right. This requires more of a stealth approach.
The Atom, his height reduced to just half an inch, emerged from the Flash's right ear cup and leapt onto his teammate's outstretched palm. Once he landed, he grew another 3 inches in height and increased his weight to 2 pounds.
Okay, but you don't know how hard it is for me to hold back.
The Flash cocked his arm and let fly. The Atom shrank again as he flew, dwindling to subatomic size and passing through the door. In moments, the metal door slid open, and a human-sized Atom motioned the Flash inside.
Come on. I wired around the security circuits in the entryway so no one downstairs should know we're here. But just the same, keep your voice down.
The Flash nodded, and the Atom shrank back down to a 6-inch height, taking a position on the speedster's shoulder. Under the illumination of a single safety lamp, they could see that the inside of the building was lined with cables. A huge freight elevator dominated the center of the room. A ladder stretched down a utility shaft alongside the lift. Wally peered down the shaft. It appeared to drop straight down for several hundred feet.
I think you better take your seat and strap in, Ray. I'm gonna need to move really fast.
The Atom shrank back into the Flash's ear cup.
Ready? Then hang on tight.
The Flash jumped feet first down the shaft. As he fell, he pumped his legs faster and faster, generating a cushion of compressed air beneath him to slow his fall. At the bottom of the shaft, a corridor led off in just one direction. The Flash raced down the passage, dropping each cultist he met. So fast did he run that not one of them ever saw him. No one had a chance to register more than a sudden rush of wind before they were knocked unconscious.
Okay, Adam, you can come out now.
The Atom emerged to find 200 unconscious men, all blindfolded, with their hands and feet securely tied up.
That was 45 seconds. What took you so long?
I had to make sure we had someone to question later, just following the Batman's advice. Every one of them had an artificial molar filled with poison.
Good work. Now what are we looking at down here?
Some pretty lavish digs, considering how far underground we are. Parts of it are like Hef's place, only without the playmates. But I've found something you'll really want to see.
The Flash led the Atom past a thick steel door labeled Vault 7. Inside was a wall lined with video screens showing weather patterns over major American cities. The Atom quickly checked out the control console.
That strange energy is being channeled through this equipment, but where's it coming from?
When the Atom flicked the switch, one wall of the chamber slid open, revealing an 8-foot cylindrical capsule.
Wow! I didn't know this was here. Is this what we're looking for?
Now, wait a sec. I have to route around the locking mechanisms. Here, this should do the trick.
The top third of the capsule swung open, and the Flash's eyes widened. Inside, Mark Martin reclined limply on foam padding, an intravenous drip line in one arm. His eyes were glazed, and a thin stream of blood trickled from his nose. Superman came to, aching all over. He could neither move nor see. His arms and legs were bound up in super-thick manacles. Steel goggles, lined with lead, blocked his vision. Superman concentrated, his eyes glowing red. The goggles began to melt away, but as the molten metal dripped from his battered face, the glow of his heat vision faded out. He jerked his head from side to side, dislodging the last of the goggles.
Oh, are you running out of steam? It appears that my calculations were correct.
Superman looked around. He could see that he'd been moved, but to where he couldn't tell. The chamber around him was 15 feet in each dimension. The walls, floors, and ceiling were composed of 5-foot square slabs, those in the ceiling glowing with a faint light, all backed with lead. There were no visible doors. He and Cobra appear to be sealed in.
Oh, that's a nasty bruise on your cheek. You are at my mercy, Superman. I know that your power is derived from the sun as much as from your alien genes. These walls are very thick and very dense. You will find no sunlight here.
What now, Cobra? Will you try to kill me?
Only if you are fool enough to try to escape. Killing you would be a terrible waste. After all, we have so very much in common, you and I.
Hardly.
On the contrary, you are more like me than you realize. Neither of us knew his natural parents. We are both men of great power. At times, there have been those who have worshipped you as a living god, even more, perhaps, than who now worship me.
I never sought that.
Neither did I. At first. Godhead was something expected of me by my followers. In my youth, I once rashly rejected the Order of Nolopambu and went out into the world on my own. What I saw there disgusted me.
I've seen a lot of the world myself, Cobra. It's far from perfect, but what you're doing to it is madness.
There is no madness in true change, but that will occur only when it is forced upon humanity, and that is where we do differ, you and I. You seek to bring order to a world that is anything but orderly. Chaos is the natural state of the world, Superman. You squander your power in defense of a people who waste their resources. You foolishly seek to change people by the example of your good works.
You're wrong, Cobra. I don't try to change people. I just try to help. Changing is up to them.
The aid you render only enables the people you prize so highly to muddle along on the path to oblivion. They continue to cheat and steal and kill.
Some of them, yes. But I try to help anyway.
History has proven that the good you do one day is wiped out the next.
Sometimes. But I believe in doing good anyway.
Oh, that is truly madness.
No. Paradoxical, maybe, but not madness.
Ah, now I understand. The paradoxical commandments. I have read them, of course. If they constitute your creed, then you were right. We do have very little in common. You are a fool, Superman. You and your band of superheroes are doomed to fail.
Are we? The League has never had to trick people into buying into our ideals. Tell me, how did you convince the Weather Wizard to join your cult? I assume it was a different sort of lie than the one you tried on Dr. Stratus.
So, you learned of the Stratos connection, eh? Very good, Superman. Stratos was a stubborn case. He resisted me mightily. But I was able to extract some interesting technology from his muddled mind. Whereas Mardon, that poor fool, believed that I would be content to extort the wealth of nations, he has no idea just how much I intend to remake the world.
You can't win, Cobra. Humanity is too resilient. You'll never be able to overwhelm us all.
Such optimism from one who is a helpless captive.
Cobra loomed closer, jabbing his staff up under the Man of Steel's chin.
But you are the one who is wrong. You and your pitiful, paradoxical commandments. How on earth can you have faith in such drivel?
It's hard sometimes. But then again...
Ow!
Superman tore his other arm free and grabbed Cobra with both hands.
I'm stronger than you are.
Cobra's eyes rolled up, and he dropped his staff. He went limp and abruptly slipped out of his tunic. Bare-chested, he backflipped away from the startled man of tomorrow. Simultaneously, a wall panel swiveled around, revealing a large cannon.
I have my own reserves, fool!
A trapdoor fell open at Cobra's feet, and he dropped from sight. It sealed tight after him. Caught in the energy screen, Superman fought to kick his right foot free.
Hello, Superman. If you can still hear this, you are in the final moments of your life. That particle beam is locked onto your heat signature and will follow your every turn. It's more powerful than the one that fool Stratus designed, and it will burn you worse than kryptonite. The walls of this chamber are 8 feet thick, enough to slow you down should you attempt to break out. But there will be no time for that. The air is being drawn from the chamber as well. This will be your tomb, Superman. Farewell.
A 100 miles east of Colorado Springs, a sequence of launch codes cleared. 3 guided missiles erupted from their underground silos and shot into the heavens. Each carried multiple warheads bearing thousands of toxic gas capsules, all earmarked for major cities in the West and the Pacific Coast. Hot on their tails was the Martian Manhunter. He accelerated after the first missile, lowering his density and reaching into the guts of its guidance system. The missile began gyrating. John swooped under the wobbling missile and gave it a hard shove upward. The missile obediently followed a new path straight up, out of the atmosphere and off into the depths of space. The Manhunter spun around and shot after the next missile, already several miles downrange. Deep inside Vault 7, the Flash pulled the Weather Wizard's control rod out of the cylindrical capsule.
Does that help any?
No, nothing's changed. But the Wizard set in motion's still going on.
Got this from a med kit I spotted earlier. Help me prop him up.
The Flash broke an ammonia ampule under Martin's nose.
Anything?
Hey, Mark! Wake up, buddy! Hold on. Here's some coffee, buddy.
Wait, where'd you get that?
It's an evil lair, not a slave camp. They have rec rooms. Here, drink up. There you go. Attaboy.
What? Flash, why are you being so nice to me?
Because we need you awake and alert, jerk. Cobra's been playing you for a fool. He's using you to destroy the world piece by piece, and God help us, we need you to save it.
No, I don't believe you.
You better believe it or we're all dead.
The Flash wheeled him around toward the wall of monitors, and the Atom switched the screens to satellite news feeds. Disaster after disaster filled the monitors.
This is all happening now. There are storms, heat waves, cyclones, and monsoons across the entire planet. Cobra hijacked the planet's broadcasts to let us in on his plan. He's gonna usher in a new age of chaos.
No, that's not the way it was supposed to be. No, Cobra said—
Cobra lied. And the only way you can get back at him is to return the weather to the way it was.
I don't know if I can. It's all so big. It's so out of control.
Don't give me that. You shuffled the deck. You can sort it out again.
That's right. The wand is just a focus. You're the trigger. And the power provided by Cobra is still online. Now I have the transmission systems ready to go. You have to do this now.
The Weather Wizard's gaze wandered from the Atom and the Flash over to the screens, then back to the wand.
What do I have to do?
Cobra emerged into an immense underground hangar, many miles away from Superman's death chamber. Cobra had jumped into a small rail car and shot across an emergency escape tunnel. In the center of the hangar, a tall metal rocket, 75 feet tall and 50 feet across at the base, sat perched atop a massive tripod. This was the Ark, his aerial flagship. Underlings immediately ran to him with a fresh tunic.
Status report.
Operation New Dawn is underway, Sahib. The moment your lair was breached, the failsafes automatically transmitted the launch protocols. By now, all missiles are away.
We are pleased, but one major target remains. Prepare to depart at once.
High over Lake Michigan, Green Lantern dropped from the ionosphere and chased after a missile.
Come on, Kyle, think! What would Hal Jordan do? He was a test pilot, real right stuff kind of guy, always flying faster. Faster! That's it!
Green Lantern channeled his will through the power ring, creating two huge booster engines on either side of the missile. The added thrust threw off the rocket's trajectory and increased its speed, causing it to burn up harmlessly in the upper atmosphere.
Okay, that saved Chicago. Up next, St. Louis, Memphis, and New Orleans.
Superman fought on, slowly making his way, step by painful step, across the room. True to Cobra's words, the cannon tracked his every move. His cape was nearly torn away, and his hair was plastered back against his scalp by the ferocious energy stream. He couldn't evade the beam, he couldn't destroy it. He knew that energy can't be destroyed, but it can be transformed. He dropped to the floor, and his fingers found purchase along the seam of one of the stone slabs. The Man of Steel wrenched up an 18-inch thick section of one entire slab. Then, with a mighty heave, he hoisted it before him, holding it like a shield. Its target hidden, the cannon swung back and forth, the particle beam sweeping across the slab, across the entire chamber. Catching his breath, Superman put his shoulders to the back of the stone barrier and shoved it forward toward the cannon. The slab was jammed full against the wide bore of the cannon. The metal barrel instantly grew white hot. His stone shield glowed red, then orange and yellow. And then it too glowed white hot, as radiant as a small sun. Raw energy rippled over Superman. He smiled grimly.
That which does not kill me makes me stronger!
What was that?
We're under attack! Everybody!
An 8-foot-thick section of granite, lead, and reinforced concrete erupted into the hall. Through a cloud of dust and debris, the Man of Steel stalked out and seized the nearest underling by the jaw.
Where is he? Where's Cobra?
Thundering across the skies of eastern Massachusetts, Wonder Woman threw her translucent robot plane into a steep power dive. She had already dispatched a score of Cobra's missiles, but as the Amazon closed on the last one, the plane suddenly began to pitch and roll.
What in the world?
Her plane bobbed and weaved, slowly losing control. The jet stream was completely abnormal. Thrown about by wildly fluctuating gusts, the plane slammed hard into the missile. Both fell earthward. Diana gripped the control yoke, struggling to steady her craft as the missile split apart, releasing its payload. After several precious seconds, Wonder Woman finally fought the nose of her plane up, leveling off at 10,000 feet. But now, thousands of gas pods were raining down over the Boston Metroplex. The Amazon sent the plane screaming after them. At her command, the lower fuselage began morphing into a huge, web-like snare.
I have to get them all. Come on. Come on!
Superman flew out from the underground hangar, leaving it ruined in his wake. Focusing his Kryptonian eyes beyond the visible spectrum, he spotted the heat trail left by the Ark.
There it is.
And as he rose, the rays of the sun once again washed over him, further replenishing his energy reserves. Pushing himself, he accelerated to 4 and then 5 times the speed of sound. The trail led Superman high into the upper atmosphere. There seemed to be nothing but empty air in front of him. A light distortion field had rendered Cobra's flagship invisible to normal detection. But not to the Man of Tomorrow. He clearly saw the infrared outline of the Ark dead ahead. Superman reached the aft section of the supersonic craft and grabbed on, clawing a handhold into the metal of the Ark's hull near a rear hatch. The caped man dove through the open hatch and found himself facing a dozen Cobra troopers outfitted in heavy armor. Magnetic boots held them upright against the rush of decompression. Ray blasts from their rifles pounded Superman's body, but nothing would stop him now.
Damn it!
Alone in the command cabin, Cobra grimly watched on a view screen as his elite forces were routed. The image began breaking up, and his thumb jabbed down on a control surface marked jettison. The Ark lurched ahead as its aft section dropped away, fell for 50 feet, then exploded. Cobra closed his right hand over a metal handle and thumbed a microphone switch with his left.
Divert all shield power to the engines and proceed to the primary target area. You fly to inaugurate the Kali Yuga.
The Ark lurched again. The door to the command cabin was kicked in. Superman filled the portal.
This is the end.
It is indeed. Make no sudden moves. This ship carries a cargo of my neurotoxic gas for your beloved metropolis.
And what? You'll spare the city if I let you go? No deals, Cobra.
You have little choice, Superman. Do you see what I hold in my right hand? My grip on this handle is all that prevents the release of the gas bombs. It's called a dead man's switch. You do understand what that means, don't you?
Yes. It's a switch held by a dead man.
Then Superman leapt across the cabin in a single bound. Superman's hand clamped down on the handle, even as he flung Cobra away from the controls. The terrorist leader hit hard against the bulkhead, slid to the deck, and didn't move. Lights flashed on the control panel. The Man of Steel knew instantly that despite his speed, the bomb release had been tripped. He smashed down through the deck into the bomb bay of the Ark. Gas pods were already starting to spill from the open bay. Dying cultists had smashed some of the pods against the side of the bulkhead. At the sight of the Man of Tomorrow, one hooded man rushed towards him, a pod in his hands. As the man felt dying at his feet, Superman took a faceful of the deadly gas. Spinning like a top, the Man of Steel dove through the open bay doors. As he left the Ark, he gave the ship one parting kick, sending it spiraling toward the Atlantic far below. Faster and faster, Superman spun, creating a mini tornado, drawing the pods and the escaping gas up and around him. He streaked heavenward, dragging his deadly burden high into the outer reaches of the atmosphere. Not until he was on the very edge of space did he stop spinning. There, the pods rupture, their gases dispersing harmlessly. The Man of Steel expelled the gas he had inhaled on the Ark, watching its toxins crystallize and disperse in the frigid vacuum. Weakened by his ordeal and unable to take a breath, Superman threw himself earthward. Colors swirled before his eyes, then started to fade. He was still far from the surface when he blacked out. As he dropped, the last tattered remnants of his cape tore away and burned up. The very air around him glowed brightly from the heat of re-entry. He fell for over 100 miles before slamming into the North Atlantic and disappearing beneath the waves. On the roof of the Daily Planet building, Lois Lane stood just outside the shadow of the big golden globe. After days of rain, the sky was finally clearing, and the newspaper's star reporter had ascended to the rooftop. She often came up here with her husband. It was one of their favorite secret places. But despite the clearing skies, there was an unpleasantness this afternoon. The very air felt heavy, oppressive. It had been days since she'd last seen Clark, or even heard from him, and now she paced nervously around the globe.
What are you expecting, Lois? A note in a bottle? Maybe a message written across the sky?
At that moment, Lois looked up and glimpsed what appeared to be a shooting star streaked down from the heavens. It quickly burned out. The weird timing made her jump, and Lois felt a sudden, almost painful shiver of foreboding. She closed her eyes tight and made a wish.
Come home, Clark. Come home safe.
The sun shone brightly on Superman's bruised and swollen face. His eyes fluttered, and he slowly raised a hand to shield them.
You look as though you've been through a war.
The Man of Steel blinked and lifted his head to the right. He found himself lying across a wing of Wonder Woman's robot plane, just a few feet above the Atlantic Ocean.
Then I must look as bad as I feel. Sun feels good, though.
The Amazon knelt down beside the Man of Steel, helping him sit up.
Easy now. You hit the ocean pretty hard.
I did? I don't remember. It's a big ocean. How did you find me?
Well, I had a little help.
Superman turned to find Aquaman crouching to his left.
First Batman and now you. I'm becoming the Justice League's designated rescuer. Actually, I had a little help too. I'd alerted marine mammals worldwide just in case. And when the watchtower radioed your trajectory, I sent a second telepathic alert to the whales and dolphins in the area. A couple killer whales kept you afloat until I arrived. They were happy to help, by the way. Their pod still sings of how you handled that careless chemical tanker, Captain, last year.
Chemicals. The nerve gas.
Oh, it's all right. The missile payloads were all intercepted and neutralized. Green Lantern reported that you took out the last of them. He's off plasma torching any poisons that were released into space.
And Cobra?
The wreck of the Ark sat half in and half out of the water along the coast of northern Maine. The Batman picked his way through the wreckage. Every few feet, he knelt slowly, collected a sample, and tucked it carefully into a labeled vial. When he finally emerged from the Ark, the rest of the Justice League had gathered on the nearby shore.
Batman? No use to seeing you out in the daytime.
It's late afternoon. Twilight is falling. And these are special circumstances.
The Batman handed his vials over to the Manhunter, who inserted them into a portable analyzer brought down from the watchtower.
Nicest day I've seen in a long time. And all thanks to the weather wizard, believe it or not. The Atom and I finally got through to the guy, Superman. It took a major effort, but the Wiz managed to restore things to normal. Or at least as normal as the weather ever gets. I think you burned out about 50 million brain cells in the process.
That's a bit of an exaggeration. But between the strain he underwent, putting the jet stream back in place, and the realization of how he'd been used, Martin has suffered a serious breakdown. Star Labs currently has him under sedation, and they're keeping him under a suicide watch. He shouldn't cause any more trouble, but they're not taking any chances.
Any estimates on the day's final toll?
Let's see.
Green Lantern looked over a ring-generated PDA.
6 missile sites shut down, 5 other bases raided, over 8,000 cultists were taken alive, and another 743 died, most by their own hand, not counting the dozen or so from the crash of the Ark. All in all, the sun is pretty much set on Operation New Dawn.
And yet there was no sign of Cobra in the wreckage?
None, regrettably.
We will do a more thorough analysis of the DNA we gathered, but for now, the evidence is inconclusive.
Well, that's just great. If that creep has gotten away again...
Hey, Flash, we didn't take this gig because it was easy. Otherwise, anybody could do it. At least that's what you keep telling me.
And never forget, Flash, the League was founded to uphold justice against all threats. In that, we've succeeded.
Yeah, you're right. I just hate it when the real monsters get away.
We all do, Flash. But we don't know that Cobra got away. And even if he did, he isn't immortal. If he's still alive, we'll find him. If not today, then tomorrow. And when we do, we'll stop him. Him and those like him.
Yes. Our work is not over until all such as Cobra are defeated.
All? You realize that means we'll have to be on guard forever.
We, or our successors.
The Batman stared off into the twilight.
I believe it was Jefferson who said, "Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty."
Yes. It's a never-ending battle.
Ray Palmer looked up from his screens as the Manhunter entered the Watchtower's monitor bay.
Good morning, John. What brings you up here so bright and early?
I am here for the official changing of the guard, Adam.
What, is it July already?
It is indeed. You've been very good about this. You've been on duty up here since before the weather crisis.
Oh, I don't mind. Though it was nice when the Blue Beetle filled in for a few hours.
that hardly constituted a break. You were on a mission with the Flash.
I knew what the job entailed when I took it, John.
Be that as it may, I am here to stand a shift at the monitors. Go home, Ray.
Okay, you talked me into it. Just as well. I'm scheduled to deliver a paper before a symposium next week, and I could use the prep time. Well, it's all yours. Oh, by the way, there's a message waiting for you. Two, in fact.
Messages?
Emails over our public access link directed to you. And neither one looked like spam. See you later.
As the Atom took his leave, John settled into the monitor bay. The first message was from the Rocky Mountain Smoke Jumpers, thanking him once more for all his help and inviting him to their next chicken barbecue. There would be ice cream, the message said. He replied immediately, accepting the invitation. He read and reread the message several times, enjoying it more with each reading, before saving it to a text file. When John finally clicked on the other message, he was thinking that, whatever it was, it couldn't top a chicken barbecue. He was wrong. The second message was from Elmendorf Air Force Base, an electronic letter of commendation and thanks from Colonel Hollister. Attached to the email were two photos. The first was of the aircrew he had rescued. The three airmen and the female staff sergeant all stood in three-quarter profile, each with identical grins, their sleeves rolled up to reveal new tattoos, also identical, of John's own likeness, encircled by the astronomical symbol for Mars. Over the years, he had seen a few Manhunter tattoos, roughly one for every 1,000 or so tattoos of Superman's S-shield, but he had never before seen a group of people bearing his likeness. He could hear his heart pounding as he clicked open the second photo. The image of Chief Master Sergeant Lopez filled the screen. Lopez, the man who had drawn a gun on him. The Master Sergeant solemnly faced the camera, his right hand raised in salute. His left hand had pulled open his uniform shirt to show his Manhunter tattoo. Lopez's tattoo was bigger, on his chest and just over the heart. John sat staring at the photos, tears running freely down his face.
Case 1066, the State of Nevada versus Orrin Skinner. Hello, Orrin. Can't say that I'm surprised to see you again. You are here for 2 counts of reckless endangerment, 1 count of reckless driving, 1 count of driving while intoxicated, 1 count of resisting arrest, 1 count of burglary, 1 count of carrying a handgun without a permit, and 1 count of assault with a deadly weapon. How do you plead?
Guilty, Your Honor.
Guilty? Really? Counselor, have you advised your client of the seriousness of these charges?
I have, Your Honor. This is my client's decision.
Then let the defendant approach the bench. You realize, Orrin, that you're going to do time for this one.
Yes, Your Honor, I think I need to. I've been denying a lot of things for a long time. I went through detox in the lockup, and I think I need rehab, anger management, whatever help I can get. If serving time is what it takes, well, I guess I want that too.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but I believe you are sincere.
Well, I am, Your Honor. I got a scare that, well, what I saw convinced me that I need to change the way I live. And that's all I care to say about that. But I'll do whatever it takes to make restitution and turn my life around. So help me God.
If you'll forgive my saying so, you look as though you could use some serious R&R.
Don't you ever knock.
Alfred was busy, so I let myself in.
I don't know why I bother with alarm systems. You look disgustingly healthy, Kent. Not so much as a single lingering bruise.
I've always healed fast. How are you doing?
I'm healing too. Just a bit slower.
What do you expect after crawling around the wreckage of that ark the way you did? Really, Bruce, John could have handled that.
I like to be thorough where Cobra is concerned. As do you, it appears.
Really?
The various national security agencies have been scouring the Cobra bases that the League uncovered, and apparently not one scrap of Cobra's tech survived intact. Zip. Nada.
Is that a fact? Everything was destroyed.
Not a single schematic remained.
Imagine that.
Clark removed his glasses and began to polish them with the end of his tie.
Various countries, as well as several, shall we say, stateless organizations who had shared intelligence resources with the League, expected some sort of spoils from this little war. Many of them are bitterly disappointed.
No doubt. But we can't always get what we want.
There are even certain highly placed individuals within our own administration who are upset by this. They feel that national security would be greatly enhanced if they had access to control over the weather.
Do they?
Kent slipped his glasses back into place.
Well, it's a free country. They're entitled to their opinions.
You know, Clark, sometimes you surprise me. Just when I think I have you all figured out, I realize how wrong I can be.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I'd hate to be predictable. If I can surprise even you, I must be doing something right.
Oh, I can be surprised, all right. I owe you. If you hadn't paid me that visit the other week, we might never have realized the full scope of Cobra's plans.
You'd have figured it out. Either working with me or working with someone else from the team.
Perhaps. But in time?
We'll never know. Fortunately, we don't need to. It's a hypothesis contrary to fact. Let it rest. And let yourself rest, will you? You've been getting by on as little sleep as I was.
You really are becoming a detective. How the hell did you know?
I have eyes, Bruce. We're about the same age, but right now you could pass for 10 years older. And I can hear the exhaustion in your voice. But don't get paranoid. You could probably still fool anyone else. Well, except Alfred. But if you keep running yourself into the ground, you won't be able to fool anyone.
Fanaticism never rests. I can't either. Cobra wasn't the first, and he won't be the last. I have to be better prepared for the next one.
And total exhaustion will help you accomplish that, Hal? Look, you don't have to book a cruise, but it wouldn't kill you to take a day off. 2 days?
I don't...
Well, that might be too much of a shock to your system, so be careful. Maybe I am becoming a pretty good detective, but I wouldn't want to do the job by myself.
I'll think about it.
Clark's right eyebrow rose above the rim of his glasses, but he said nothing.
Seriously, now think about it.
Clark settled into an adjacent armchair and pulled a small notebook from his pocket.
In that case, Mr. Wayne, do you mind if I ask a few questions?
Clark, what are you doing?
Just think of this as an informational interview. I should learn about the special projects you're currently working on, Bruce, just in case I need to take over on short notice.
All right, I get the point. You're right. I'll take care of it.
Oh?
Word of honor.
Bruce Wayne extended his right hand.
Good enough.
Clark rose from his chair and shook the offered hand.
The world would be a scarier place without the Batman around.
He walked to the window, then paused and turned.
Take care of yourself, Bruce.
And with that, Kent was gone. So fast, no one else could possibly have seen him go. The curtains swayed a bit where he had stood. Bruce Wayne stared at the curtains until they stopped moving.
Alfred?
Yes, sir? Have you finished your list of things you needed to accomplish by yesterday?
No. I think that can wait until tomorrow.
Are you ill, sir?
Not yet, but if I continue at this pace, I soon will be. It's a beautiful day, and I think that I'll spend it lounging by the pool. Maybe catch up on my reading. Why don't you take the rest of the day off as well?
For once, Alfred Pennyworth was absolutely speechless. Sunday, July 4th, Clark Kent and Lois Lane sat huddled on a bench in the back of a twin-engine plane as it climbed to 13,000 feet. Clark gazed into his wife's eyes and spoke into his headset.
Nervous?
No. Okay, a little.
That's only natural, but there's nothing to worry about. I'll be with you all the way.
I know. I feel so silly, Clark, getting butterflies like this. I've been on hundreds of jumps, but this feels so different.
She ran a hand over the ballistic nylon that puckered beneath her arms.
So does this gear. These Birdman suits. The mind boggles.
A big, broad-shouldered man entered the compartment, and the couple got to their feet.
All right, you two. We're almost to the drop zone. Just remember that you want to keep your arms symmetrical to your body. And you'll need to pull the arm and leg releases when you open your main chute. If you get into any trouble, just yank on the emergency cutaway that's on your hip. All clear?
Clear.
Very clear. Great. You'll do fine. Okay, that's 13,500 feet. We're here. You're clear. Go! Go!
Lois and Clark leapt out into space, arms and legs spread wide. As they fell, air rush through special mesh vents in their jumpsuits, filling the double layer of parachute fabric that stretched between their arms and torsos and their legs. The fabric wings became rigid as they filled, creating an airfoil profile and lift. Downward velocity dropped, and Clark and Lois both shot forward through the air.
Woo! This is incredible! I'm flying! I am flying!
Clark swooped in close alongside her, his voice in her helmet's headset.
I'm very well!
Oh, this is awesome! Awesome! So this is how it feels?
No! Actually, this is better!
Get out!
Really? It's so effortless!
How fast are we going?
Forward about 80, but we're still falling at 35 miles an hour.
Oh, don't remind me! I want to enjoy this for as long as I can!
On they flew, skimming the edges of low clouds. Swooping down from the skies, they traveled over 4 miles before their wrist altimeters buzzed.
It's time, Lois!
Do we have to?
Lois!
Kidding!
She pulled the first releases, freeing her arms from the wings. A sharp tug on the ripcord, and her parachute deployed. Her fall slowed. She looked over and saw Clark in a similar position. Simultaneously, they pulled the second releases, cutting the wings free from their legs. Moments later, they drifted down to a soft landing, less than 100 yards from the little airfield where they'd taken off. Lois quickly unhitched her silks, then took off her helmet and ran to join her husband.
Oh. Oh. Thank you, Clark. Thank you, thank you, thank you. How did you learn about this?
The Birdman suits? I interviewed their creators the other day for an upcoming piece in the planet's feature section. Fascinating fellows.
I'm glad that I know a fascinating fellow of my own.
So tell me, Lois, what's it like flying?
It's amazing. Just incredible. I know I'm babbling, but I can't help it. I have to say that it's just about the best present anyone ever gave me.
Happy belated anniversary, Ms. Lane.
Happy belated anniversary, Mr. Kent. You're sure you don't have a Justice League meeting to run?
Not today. Not for many days. It's not my job anymore.
Really? Since when?
Since yesterday. My term as chairman was up, and I chose to exercise the Washington prerogative. I turned the gavel over to the Manhunter. Running the show is his headache for the next year.
Well, in that case, when can we fly again?
Clark scooped Lois up in his arms and carried her to a waiting plane.
This has been a graphic audio production of DC Comics, Justice League of America, Superman, The Never-Ending Battle. Copyright 2008 by DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Superman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2008, DC Comics. Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Novel written by Roger Stern. With performances by James Konacek as Superman, Richard Rowan as Batman, Colleen Delaney as Wonder Woman, Thomas Penny as John Jones, Eric Messner as Green Lantern, Michael Glenn as The Flash, David Coyne as Aquaman, Andy Clements as The Atom, Stephen Carpenter as Cobra, Bruce Allen Rauscher as The Weather Wizard, Nanette Savard as Lois Lane, Terrence Aselford as Alfred Pennyworth, Lily Beacon as Cat Grant, Tim Carlin as Perry White, Michael Replogle as Jonathan Kent, Faith Potts as Martha Kent, Christopher Grayville as Jack Ryder, Dylan Lynch as Constantine Stratos, Elizabeth Demery as Kitty Faulkner, with Tess Rowan, Peter Stray, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Dolores King-Williams, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Richard Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dan Smith. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing at Graphic Audio Sound Design by Johann Detweiler. The JLA theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Dan Smith. If you enjoyed JLA Superman, The Neverending Battle, be sure to look for our other Graphic Audio DC Comics titles, including Infinite Crisis and 52, available at Rogue Stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.